This is Will's Band of the Week for June 16th, 2019. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris, live in studio.
I'm here. And check that out.
Yeah, it's just you and me. Barrett had to relinquish his position for the week.
And I am now in the Barrett seat with the Barrett microphone.
I know, and that chair, I think in podcast history, decades from now, it's going to be the Barrett chair. Right when people come through here for the tours.
Yeah, indeed.
You have to pay extra to sit on the chair.
Right. So when I talk, if what I say makes half as much sense, it's because of the microphone and the chair. It's
Maybe you'll start doing incredible comparisons of what a band sounds like. You know, like just that.
Just imbue me with that power. Yeah.
Right. Before we move on, we have a quick note from David.
Hi, this is your New York correspondent with a first ever live apology as opposed to a live report. I was supposed to be on the podcast this week, but things just got too complicated after moving to Brooklyn for indie rock stardom. Although, as Will noted, I've already achieved indie rock stardom by being on the podcast, so there was really no need to make the move at all. Anyway, now that we are here within a stone's throw of Williamsburg and Bushwick, a.k.a. the center of the musical world, I've need to make amends by giving you all my live report from the Samia concert at Rough Trade, but I can do that next week, and again, I apologize.
Well, we have so much excitement this week. I know you had a couple of special feature things, so why don't we start with some of your content, because I'm sure it's going to be very rich.
All right, well, so just in the past couple of days, Netflix has released a documentary, a Martin Scorsese documentary, called Rolling Thunder Review, which is about Bob Dylan and his 1976 national tour, where he basically just got a bunch of his bohemian buddies in a bus and drove around the country. And like Joan Baez was with him, and Allen Ginsberg doing beat poetry, who basically looks like he, you know, he smells like donkey feet all the time. And it's really interesting in that you get a sense of what it was like at the time. It's basically a 2-hour infomercial for cocaine.
Wow.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's kind of just a glimpse into kind of what things were like in 1976 as they toured the country. And it's really funny in that. So, you know, Bob Dylan is the one who, you know, he's still a legend at that point, and he organizes this and kind of gets all these clingers, hangers-on, other musicians to go on tour with him. And a lot of the other acts are essentially doing Bob Dylan impersonations. I mean, because a lot of these people had grown up watching and listening to Bob Dylan, so there are shots of him, you know, standing in a coffee house or in the audience while someone is up there on stage essentially doing a Bob Dylan impersonation without like even really knowing it. And he's probably just got to be rolling his eyes like, God, what have I done? But yeah, it's really interesting. I would recommend watching it. It's just a good kind of slice of the era type of deal.
Is it the standard rockumentary format where they show old footage and then they have like people being interviewed in modern day, reflecting back on it?
There is some of that. They do actually have Bob Dylan being interviewed about it, and he doesn't make a whole lot of sense all the time, but it's at the time, there was kind of this avant-garde, I guess he's Swedish filmmaker who got on board and signed up to be the official filmographer of the Rolling Thunder Review. And so they got a lot of amazing footage that I guess has probably been sitting on a you know, on the cutting room floor for all these many years. And so Martin Scorsese got together and stitched it all together. And, I mean, it shows, if anything, it shows how far above everybody else Bob Dylan was in terms of talent, in terms of, you know, just kind of being the voice of a generation, because all these other people are just kind of his acolytes, trying to do what he does. So I don't know. It's really interesting.
So in 1976, he had all of his big hit albums before then, right? From like late 60s to...
Mostly. He had already done the whole Dylan Goes Electric. And this is actually kind of the way that the tour was being pitched, as Dylan's kind of getting back to folk now. Even though a lot of the shows that he does were electric, it was Dylan is re-energized. He's, you know, re-incentivized. He's... you know, at a new creative peak. And so that's kind of how they pitch the review.
Cool.
But well, yeah, everybody's totally whacked out on drugs and nobody makes any sense. Like Allen Ginsberg will be sitting around reading one of his poems and everybody's just kind of like nodding their head. Like that makes total sense. And it's absolute nonsense, but I don't know, kind of the way of the world back then.
Oh man. All right. Let's do this next. I'm going to talk about nostalgia rock. We haven't really, I don't know, I guess as a subject, we haven't really talked about nostalgia rock.
Right? Sure.
It's kind of a category, right? And there's so many bands now that are still touring and, you know, charging high ticket prices because the age demographic has improved for them.
Mm-hmm.
And playing what they played 30 or 40 years ago. And, you know... I guess I don't have any real problem with the concept, because a lot of people are having a lot of fun watching nostalgia rock, right?
Yeah. People pay top dollar for nostalgia these days.
Yeah. So I went, this was a complete nostalgia thing for me. Cheap Trick was coming to town. And I thought, you know what's funny is, like, I kind of thought that I had seen them maybe like 35 or 40 years ago. But the more I think about it, I think maybe I never did see them live back in their actual prime. So this may have been the first time I saw them live.
How many original members of Cheap Trick are still there?
Three out of the four.
I believe you and Barrett just had a discussion about this, correct? About how many band members can still be in a band?
Right, and it's yeah, I think David showed us that, linked us that article where there are a couple bands that have no original members. I think it's Blood, Sweat, and Tears. They don't have any original members, and then some guy bought the trademark, and then they say, well, it's more of a concept than it is an actual band.
Yeah, it's a tribute band at that point.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
Go ahead. Cheap Trick.
So they do have a significant omission, which is the drummer, Bunny Carlos.
Sure.
He was a big part of the band's character. Just kind of a goofy guy and funny, and just when you saw his picture, you were like, okay, that guy's funny. So they had some kind of falling out, and they sued each other, and then they dismissed it. So they apparently get along now, but he's not touring with them. And so they've got the guitar player, Rick Nielsen's son, playing drums. And it just doesn't seem right, you know? He plays drums perfectly competently, but it does seem like something's missing. But so, you know, you go into this and you're thinking, okay, what's this going to be like? You know, there was a big crowd of aging rockers, and I first thought I might be below the average age, but I think that was wishful thinking. But I bet the average age was in the upper 40s, maybe, because you have to account for the 32-year-olds in the audience that bring that average down a little bit, right?
I mean, scientifically, if you're doing this, yes.
Yeah. There's barely anybody, you know, below 30, and there are a lot of people in their 60s, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of maintained a fondness for Cheap Trick just because of how much I liked them when I was between the ages of, like, 16 and 21, you know. But I have to say, this was pretty disappointing in a lot of ways.
Oh no.
Yeah. The classics, I would say there was 30 minutes worth of very enjoyable nostalgia rock, and there were also parts of it that were just really, really not good.
They do actually have some like newish material, right?
Yeah, I think so. But
you want to hear all the Live at Budokan stuff.
Yeah, some of that. Well, another point I'll make is like their biggest song was probably I Want You to Want Me, and I never, sure. I don't even like that song, you know. So it's like when they played that, I'm like, okay, well, it's kind of lame for a hit. A lot of it in the middle, I actually used the word god-awful in a text to a friend of mine.
Mm.
Some of it in the middle was just, like, I don't know why. Maybe you just got to try to still have fun when you're a nostalgia act. But they're like, the bass player, Tom Peterson, would now like to sing a couple songs. It's a mistake. Big mistake. It's like, he's not a singer.
Are they at the point now where their fan base is already baked in and are going to pay to go see him do whatever, and so now they just feel like we can just do whatever now?
Yeah, kind of.
We're not driving off any new fans.
Right, I think so. Yeah. So, yeah, I did. I was walking away from it actually kind of like worked up about how much I didn't like it. and then my thoughts about it kind of moderated, and I guess it was okay. But I don't know. Another thing is the bass player, I always thought he was kind of cool, and he played, I remember way back, he played an 8-string bass. So it's just the regular four strings on the bass, but you've got an extra string that's an octave higher for each string, right?
So like almost like a 12-string guitar.
Right. So now he's playing a 12-string bass.
I can do math.
The 12-string bass is the regular four strings, but for each string that you'd normally have, you've got three, and you've got three octaves represented on each, you know, where each note that you would play. And I just think it's sort of a fun concept, but complete gimmick, because you're in the middle of a song, you can't hear it. You can't hear it at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have 100% great hearing anymore, but there's no way anybody can hear that except when he did his bass solo, and his bass solo was so rudimentary. Like, here, watch me play a few notes on my 12-string bass. So, oh, I'm sorry, you guys. I mean, it was kind of fun. I guess I'm glad I went. It was one of those things you got to do it once, but it wasn't really that good. So,
Cheap Trick, one of the rare bands where the guitarist is more famous than the lead singer, right?
Oh, I think so, probably, yeah.
I mean, when you think of Cheap Trick, immediately the first guy you think of is Rick Nielsen, right?
Right, yeah.
And is Robin Zander as famous as Rick Nielsen?
I don't think so. I have to give him credit. Robin Zander, for as old as he is still singing pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and he does have some parts that are a little bit kind of high notes that I always associate with old guys not being able to hit the high notes. But he mostly hit everything pretty well.
I'm trying to think of other bands where the lead singer is like not the most famous? Visible, yeah, famous person in the band.
That's
I
not
think Fallout Boy, also from Illinois, incidentally, is like that. I think they had like a bass player.
Really?
Pete Wentz, I believe, was like
the
more famous guy than the lead singer, whose name I don't remember, who could actually really sing.
The band Fallout Boy was from Illinois.
They're from Chicago, yes.
That is quite a trivia thing, because I always thought of them as being like from London or something.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hmm. So, people out there, send us your suggestions of bands where the...
the singer's not the most famous.
The singer's not the most famous person in the band.
All right. Back to you, Chris. I think you were going to tell us about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so this happened over a month ago now, but I don't think I've been on to do annual Chris Complains About the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame feature.
Yeah, you had an annual complaint about the Grammys,
yeah,
and then the complaint about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, this year I'm trying to think of, just off the top of my head, who's actually in it now. Stevie Nicks was inducted as a solo artist. She had already been in, of course, because of Fleetwood Mac. Hmm. I think it's debatable whether she is worthy as a solo artist, but they obviously made a big deal about the fact that she's the first woman to be inducted twice, you know, both for solo. And she did I mean, the songs she did were great. She performed a few of them. One of them with Don Henley, incidentally, mm-hmm. which is a little odd. At some point, they had a relationship that ended up with her being pregnant, and she terminated the child at his behest. And then wrote a song about it, the song Sarah, which I think went to number 7 nationally or something.
I remember that song.
Yeah, so this was like some big traumatic thing, and yet here at her Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I guess the hatchet is officially buried, and they sung together, which was, interesting.
And that song was actually about a terminated pregnancy?
Yes.
Wow.
Don Henley's baby that was never born.
Wow.
And now they're back performing together, I guess.
Wow.
Let's see. So, for the purposes of this podcast, Radiohead was also inducted. It was very understated in a very Radiohead way. They just sent two of the lesser known members of the band, Phil Selway and, I'm forgetting the other guy's name off the top of my head. The two that aren't Greenwoods and aren't Tom York.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there and they just did a very humble thank you and walked off the stage in very, very Radiohead form. The Cure, you forget how many great songs The Cure had until, you see them kind of a retrospective of their career. That was great. The Cure was interesting in that. I mean, I've been a Cure fan of and love their albums and their songs, but I literally knew nothing about the band. Like, they had just kind of stayed out of the magazines or whatever that I had read. So it's kind of a new concept these days of having one of your favorite bands where you don't really even know anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Janet Jackson was inducted. Let's see. The Zombies, I believe. I would say it was actually, instead of being Chris Complains this year, my only complaint is that Radiohead didn't get more of a, more of a celebration.
More fanfare?
Yeah. And I checked out some of the bands that didn't make it this year, and like Rage Against the Machine was one of them, and I didn't really have any complaints with any of the bands that didn't get in.
Well, you didn't complain very much.
So I know.
I'm kind of feeling let down. I was hoping for big complaints. So isn't the rule, there's something about 25 years from like your first album release?
Yeah, it has to be 25 years from your first album.
So let's see, the podcast, we need to do like 15 more years of podcasting, and then we'll be in the Rock and Roll Podcast Hall of Fame. We'll have a new, they'll have a podcast category by then.
I was thinking about this just this week. We are coming up on our 10th year of doing this podcast.
Right, yeah, it's coming up in like a month and a half, or sometime in August.
Yeah, how many podcasts in America can say they've gone continuously for 10 years?
I don't know. Not many.
Mark Maron at WTF is widely credited with, inventing the podcast, but his first podcast was a month after ours.
That's pretty cool. That's good. We beat him.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I might have mentioned to you Rick and Rose from the Poster Children. They've been doing a podcast since, like, whatever. Before there were podcasts, because it was a radio show on a student radio station in Champaign, Illinois.
And you did a podcast for well before this one, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
As did I.
Yeah.
I did a few of them.
And yeah.
I think my first one was like 2007, maybe, something like that.
And you and Barrett did a top 10. I remember you telling the story that, like, you were facing each other, both with laptops in your basement or something.
Right, right. We didn't have the full setup, so... Like, my signal had to go up into the cybersphere, come down for him to listen to, and then everything had to be run through the internet. So we're 3 feet away from each other, but...
Was there, like, a five-second delay between each
other? There was a delay, yeah. We had to deal with that, so... And these are back in the days when it was, like, dial-up internet, so it was not fast.
So we were early podcast adopters, and yet we're still not rich from it. It's terrible.
I know. Anybody wants to send us some advertising?
Benefactors out there,
right?
We're listening. All right.
I did have one last thing, one real quick. A death of the week. Bushwick Bill of the rap group Ghetto Boys from the early 90s. I mean, I'm not going to say that he was the greatest rapper of all time. They're basically known for one song, which is My Mind's Playing Tricks on Me. But he's interesting in that he was a little person in this band. In 1991, while drunk and on PCP, he actually shot his own eye out. He wore an eye patch through most of his career. And yeah, so I mean, he was a big name back in the kind of late 80s, early 90s, but hasn't really been around since. So RIP Bushwick Bill, who was from Texas, but named himself Bushwick.
He had a catchy name, and that's, I don't know, maybe that's part of it. I remember seeing references to him in the past week or so, and but I didn't know who he was.
I believe his name was a Richard Shaw. That's his given name.
That's not as exciting as Bushwick Bill.
No, definitely like Bushwick Bill better, more.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for having fun.
Who isn't?
Because I'm pro-fun, I have decided that before we get to our regular programming, we should do one of these. It's time for the
Rockin' Apple Update.
So we'll let Chris make the pick from the last five songs played on the Rockin' Apple.
Oh, by the way, okay, Def Leppard's on this list. Def Leppard inducted into the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh, so, good. Very timely.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, it absolutely has to be the Georgia Satellites, Keep Your Hands to Yourself.
All right. Doesn't that song have like two chords?
Yes.
I think.
It's a Southern rock classic from, I would say, 1986. That's what
I'm guessing. Boy, is it really that old?
Yeah, it's 86, 87.
I've been just practicing with my old guy band, and somebody will start playing that, and you don't even have to think. You can just, the band just plays it. Because it's like the simplest song ever. Yeah. Okay, let's find
it. It's a Southern rock classic that somehow involves yodeling. Like, kind of hard to believe that didn't catch on. All right, let's see here. There it is.
I got a little change in my pocket going jingle-a-ling. Wants to call you on the telephone, baby. I give you a ring. But each time we talk, I get the same old thing. Always no hooky, no this until I get a wedding ring. My honey, my baby, don't put my love upon no shelf. She said, don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself. Your hands to yourself.
Yeah.
What year did I say that was from?
I think you said 1986.
Checked it. 1986.
Wow.
Boom.
Excellent. I don't know why, but I think I would have said like 1990 or something.
Went to number two on the Billboard charts.
I mean, how do you make that into number two?
So, so close to number one.
Yeah, I made a technical omission when I said it was two chords because it's actually three. You know, it's the three, you know, blues chords or whatever.
See, you being a musician, you can give us the lowdown on how the magic is made.
Well, if I left it that way, we'd have like 300 emails coming in saying you got that wrong. It's three chords, not two.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that to happen, so I made an immediate correction.
We get floods of emails, people correcting us.
That's why we haven't played the jingle for the mailbag, because we never get any emails. Come on, people. willsband@yahoo.com. There, I mentioned it early in the podcast. They don't have to make it through the whole thing now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just complain about me if you want.
You know, I took away that reference to iTunes in our closing statement thing, you know, the contact information.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering still, is it kind of like old-fashioned and uncool to have a Yahoo email?
I think it is.
I mean, I've got a Yahoo email for my personal email, too, and it's just too much of a pain to change it, you know, but I'm kind of like, this is kind of uncool. Maybe
it's going to be cool again, though, like someday. You just got to hang on to it.
Well, it's like a lot of people have Hotmail accounts and
hang on loosely, don't let go.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, we have a couple bands. We have at least two bands.
I threw it out on Twitter once to contact me at Hotmail, at my Hotmail account, and got a torrent of ridicule.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. People, it's just not cool to have Hotmail.
You have Hotmail? Like, why would I change?
Could you still,
it still exists.
Can you still get a like a new Hotmail account right now?
I'm pretty sure you can.
It's just a Microsoft thing, right?
Yeah, unless they just steer you to like an MSN.com email address or something. I don't
know. I think maybe with the Yahoo Mail, you can change it so it's like Ymail or something. But then that sounds dumb too, right?
I'm old school.
I don't know. Yeah. All the kids these days have the Gmail.
All the hipsters that are going back and making their own soap and stuff. Like someday we're going to be the old dudes that still have Hotmail and people will be like, yeah, you were there.
It's actually kind of not, it's email is kind of going out of style now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like young people are like, well, why would you do that? It's like writing a letter, you know, email where you don't respond until the next day.
A telegram.
Like, right. So it's all text now with the kids these days, right? Yeah.
Something like that.
I think.
It's all WhatsApp.
Right. Yeah. Now we're cool because we've started this podcaster WhatsApp group. So now we're in with the cool people. All right. We have two or three bands to discuss. Should we just go alphabetical? Or did you have a preference between these?
No preference. Let's either one.
Amyl and the Sniffers are going to get the first billing because their name starts with an A. So this is a Melbourne band, I believe.
My top 10 list of the year is going to have to be like the 10 best Melbourne bands.
Yeah, you could have a separate one.
It's
going to
be darn close, yeah.
So a little trivia item. The last time Nicholas was on and we were discussing some Melbourne bands, he rejected Amyl and the Sniffers.
So, he did?
Yeah. So it's not a unanimous pick among the podcasters. I listened to it. I thought it was pretty fun. It's kind of thrash rocky.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and you obviously, you mentioned to me that you liked it. So.
Yes. Without provocation.
They have a self-titled album. And according to the streaming service, this is punk. So just,
I think
so
that's,
you know,
probably fair.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah. What should we start with?
All right. I will pick a song since I recommended the band. Let's go with number 8, Got You. I would dare say if you like that song, then you are going to like this whole album because that, I think that is fairly representative of what it is.
Yeah. It's kind of, how is it that just a wall of guitars that sounds like the Sex Pistols or something is still right. appealing to us. It's still fun, kind of, right?
Yeah, I mean, there'll always be a place in my heart for, you know, aggressive punk. I was thinking actually about this on the way over, that a lot of music that's made, first of all, it's not made for old dudes like us. It's made for young people who were unaware that the Sex Pistols or the Runaways or anybody else existed in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, you know, what they're trying to bring back here. I mean, the band itself has their whole kind of aesthetic. They all have mullets and, you know, try to make themselves as unattractive as possible. They definitely have that kind of old aesthetic. But yeah, it's always welcome when it comes back. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right. I'm going to go back to number two, Gacked on Anger. Minute 49.
Yeah, they're not long songs.
Yeah.
In keeping with the punk ethos.
So the other thing I was thinking about is how you respond to something, I think, can be partly determined by how acceptable you find a person yelling or screaming, right?
Yeah.
Because like some people yelling or screaming kind of sounds cool, and some people yelling or screaming is like, get out of here. So, like, if this were, like, a gravelly-voiced man or something mm-hmm. doing the yelling, I don't know if I would like it. You know, yeah. the guitars would still be good.
Right.
But, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the things that we just mentioned that struck me about them is kind of how faithful they are to the original type of punk rock and the sound. And, you know, I was thinking, in today's day, if you're, I don't want to call them derivative, although they, I guess they sort of are,
mm-hmm.
how hard it is for kind of a nostalgia band like that to make it big these days, because in the streaming era, if there's a band that sounds like that, you know, you're just like two clicks away from listening to the original bands that probably actually did it a lot better. So, you know, in the old days, if there was a new band, you'd have to take out the tape, put it in your car and listen to it, and you'd kind of be stuck there. But now, if there's a band that evokes, you know, other bands, why wouldn't you just listen to the other bands? You know what I'm saying?
Well, probably because of your age.
Yes.
And you're, you know, like, if you're 20 years old, do you want to listen to this band, or do you want to be like, oh, no, I think I'll go listen to some 60-year-old guys. Of course, they weren't.
True,
the recording was made, they weren't 60.
Right, if you're talking about live performances, yeah.
But there's something, too, I think, about just like being a fan of people in your age range. So that's going to make the young bands more popular.
Well, good. Well, I hope this forces them to go back and listen to New York Dolls and Stooges and Runaways and all those pieces.
Yep. Well, we can play one more, and you get the pick.
All right. Let me take a song recommended by iTunes. This is always weird to me. When iTunes recommends a song, does that mean it's a really good song, or it's a good song relative to the other songs on the album? Because even like bad albums probably have songs with little stars by them, right?
Oh yeah, you mean like when the I think I know what you mean. Like, in the album usually has like two or three that have a star on it.
Right, and those are like supposedly the best songs, right?
I think I always kind of thought that the artist selected those. So yeah. Like, here, start with these because we think these are the highlights. But I don't know if that's right, because why wouldn't they just have the first one all the
right.
time?
Right. Yeah. Or are they the songs that you listen to the most? Is iTunes learning from you? Anyway, let's go with a song they recommend called Monsoon Rock. So you're saying if that was Lemmy singing along with Motorhead,
right.
you wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much.
Right. Exactly. That's Amel and the Sniffers. They don't do ballads, do they?
No, they don't slow it down at all. A couple weeks ago, you, in our little WhatsApp thing, you kind of teased what band you were going to be talking about on the podcast, one of the ones that I wasn't on, and you mentioned there was an artist that sounded like Courtney Barnett and AC/DC.
Right.
And I was like, oh no, they're doing Amel and the Sniffers without me. But no, instead it was Laura Imbruglia that you did.
Well, Nicholas should take note of that, because there's actually a point to be made there, isn't there? So, but this is quite a bit faster than AC/DC.
Yeah.
And she doesn't sound as much like Courtney Barnett. She has the Australian distinctive
affectation.
Yeah. But probably not quite the Courtney Barnett that Laura Imbruglia has.
Yep.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. The next band is Taco Cat.
Yeah.
And you're the one who got me to listen to this, because I'd heard of them, and like, you know, they've got a kind of a goofy name, so it makes you think they're going to be goofy. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I thought it would be more like, I don't know, a little bit more like off the wall, freeform, zany jokes and stuff, but it's more of a like a pop album with like an indie pop album with a lot of hooks, right?
I would say that. Also, if you read the word Taco Cat backwards, what does it say?
It says Taco Cat. Also,
yeah. See, yeah.
What's the name for that?
There's a literary term for that. What is it?
Can't remember.
Anyway. Yeah, so I listened to it. This is their fourth album, incidentally, and I had not heard any of the first three, although their first one, which is NVM, is actually fairly well reviewed. Got a very good review in Pitchfork. One of their past songs, I guess their most famous song, is a song called Crimson Wave about menstruation, which ended up being a big hit for them. The video has like 500,000 views or something on YouTube. At some point in an interview, one of the members of the band said that she was the illegitimate daughter of Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. Hmm. So they made news that way.
So is that real?
No.
Do we know?
No.
It just isn't real.
It just isn't real.
Okay.
It was a made-up thing. But yeah, they're so they talk about a lot of kind of feminist issues, things going on in their life, politics, but they do it in kind of a happy way. It's almost like the Smiths model, where it's dour subjects coded in happy music. So let me see, what song did I pick here? I picked the song Rose Colored Sky, so let's give that a listen.
Yeah, it's got a catchy hook, right?
Sure.
Taco Cat.
It's right in my wheelhouse.
The album is called This Mess Is a Place.
Yeah, so somebody on our WhatsApp, I forget who had said they saw them in concert and said it was a little messy and not really all that jointed. Hmm. I guess that would be the opposite of disjointed. But I suppose I could see where that might be. But I think the album is tightly put together, and it's really good, and it's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was actually one of my top picks also. So I think I'm going to go. There are a lot of good hooks on the album. I've said hooks a lot now, haven't I? I keep saying that. Let's go for a deep cut.
Ooh.
Number 9, Meet Me at La Palma.
Ooh.
Shouldn't be open anymore. Do people go there, and if so, what do they
Taco Cat.
See, I don't think that's a deep cut at all. I think that's, again, one of the better songs. There's really no highs and lows on this. Like, everything is a solid double. Like, not a whole lot of home runs, but everything is really good.
Yeah, pretty consistent album.
Yeah.
I don't think we mentioned where they're from. Are they from Seattle?
They're from Seattle, Washington, yes. Yeah.
Pacific Northwesterners.
Indeed. The question is whether what they would say if we went up and handed them a business card.
That's kind of the test now for any band, right? Can they handle that with dignity?
That's the standard. Yes. Since we've been rebuffed, called gross.
Right. I'm sure that'll happen again if we attempt that. I have some, by the way, Chris. You should probably have a collection.
I have some. No, I've got 50 of them. I don't have a lot of occasion to hand them out here at home.
I had like 8 of them in my wallet. And the other day, I'm like, why do I have 8 of these in my wallet? I only need one. Because when's it ever going to happen? I'm going to, like, hand out a business card more than once.
Well, you almost ran into Paul McCartney, so you could just hand him one.
Could hand him a whole bunch of them for all of his band members. He'd want to redistribute them, probably. All right, we can play one more Taco Cat song, right?
So, like I said, the album is very consistent. A lot of good songs. You can't go wrong with, like, songs 1 through 5. But one song that kind of stands out to me is the last song on the album. I think it's kind of the most mature song. And through a lot of silliness on the album, I think this is one I really like, and I really enjoy finishing the album with this one. So it's called Miles and Miles.
Taco Cat.
Emily Noakes is the lead singer, and I think that's by far the best vocal on the album. I think she does a great job on that song.
It's good, and I agree. It's a consistent album. So you were talking about the first 5 tracks being good. We just played 3 songs from the second half of the album.
Right. What's the test? Whether the song 7 on the album is good?
Yeah, does it sustain itself? Because there are some really good albums that just can't quite sustain themselves.
Right.
They
blow it on the first half.
Yeah. So, here's what I'm thinking. Maybe we should hold off and not do a third band this week. And here's my rationale. I'm going to be traveling for 2 weeks in July, so I need to stockpile some bands. So what I think I might do if I get the time is just throw up a couple really really short ones, just so, you know, we got to maintain our consistency, right? That's why we've been doing this for 10 years.
Are you going on tour with, like, Grim Streaker?
Well, we could maybe include a little bit of
that. Now that you're best friends with them?
I'm going out to scout for live reports. So I've got hopefully two live reports I'll be reporting on. That's redundant. You can't report on a report, but...
Catching up on some past podcasts, love the album by Dead and love Grim Streaker. In fact, I was debating whether I had enough room in my life for both Grim Streaker and Amel and the Sniffers. Like, between the two, who was going to reign supreme?
Yeah, they're slightly different from each other,
yeah,
but they have similarities too in their vibe.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Very good.
So there we go.
And we have some that didn't quite make the cut, but were right below the surface, just waiting for somebody to push them over the top, and they never got there. So I think we kind of got past the Vampire Weekend album that I know you liked a lot.
I do like the Vampire Weekend album a lot, and they were just here in Madison.
So you didn't end up going, I presume.
I did not end up going.
It sold out, and the ticket prices were crazy, but then they kind of sunk, like, in the afternoon of the day of the show. Isn't that interesting that there really is no longer such thing as a sold-out show because of the aftermarket for tickets?
Right.
It's just a matter of how insanely expensive are they. And sometimes they kind of take a tank if the speculators have overbought.
Well, it seems like the one show that I cannot get tickets to are the Beths at the shitty barn.
Right, right.
Like, there's nowhere on Craigslist, nowhere. You just can't get tickets to it.
No, I've looked on where I usually look first on for the secondary market is StubHub, and there's nothing. I've looked a couple times too. Because why aren't we going to that? That's not right.
I mean, in my brain, and I say, well, I saw him twice at South by Southwest, so I think I'm probably good for now. But
yeah,
God, I'd really like to go see him again.
Yeah,
and that was a whole month ago. 2 months
have
ago.
Have you been to the shitty barn?
I have not yet. I haven't seen a show there.
I haven't either, and it always just seems like it'd be kind of fun. I can't remember. The capacity is pretty small. It's either like, it might be 100. I'm going to guess about 100. So, yeah. We're still kind of perplexed about what happened on that show, because I think it was, the tickets went on sale at 10 o'clock, and I think I hit the button at 10:02. It said sold out.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it would be an instantaneous sellout.
You'd think they'd give tickets to the longest podcasters in America.
Yeah.
Us right here.
Right. Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. But it didn't happen.
Well.
All right. Well, anyway.
We're
somebody's
not like David Frick, who just gets front row seats to everything.
Bob Boylan will probably be at the shitty barn for this show, right?
I just watched the Muppets just did a Tiny Desk, and Bob Boylan sings in it, so make sure you go check that out.
Wow, he's trying to go back to his childhood.
Yeah, if you're a Bob Boylan fan, make sure you catch him singing a song with Elmo.
I don't know how you could not be a Bob Boylan fan. I mean, Bob Boylan's a music legend. All right, good enough. Thanks, Chris. Good to have you back in studio.
Yeah, thanks
Come
for
back
having me again.
Again soon.
I will.
And yeah, you could even come back when Barrett is occupying his chair, and you could take the Chris chair, which is not there anymore.
Well, it's holding the door shut right now.
That one is, but we had the one that was like a wicker chair that you were sort of lounging in, and now we have sort of a dining room chair. Anyway.
All right.
Okay.
I'll be back.
We'll sign off. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. You can subscribe or download the podcast wherever podcasts are available or from our website, willsband.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.